You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I'm just trying to stay present. I'm not trying to overanalyze, overthink. I'm not trying to brood on anything. I'm not trying to get like precious about like what my art means to me and what it means to the people who like my band. I feel like all that shit, it's just so pointless. I'm just like, look, man, I've been trying to be in a band that has had any sort of momentum for fucking 14 years. And right now, for whatever reason, it's happening. So let's just enjoy the ride. Let's just have fun. All this shit could end tomorrow. So let's just like make the most of it, you know?
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and we have teamed up to bring you Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops Brutal Montreal 2022, which will be taking place on September 2nd at Corona Theater. This year's edition features Deicide performing their classic album Legion in its entirety, along with Cataclysm, who will be performing their classic album Serenity and Fire in its entirety, and we have Inhuman Condition that will be opening up the show. Tickets are flying for this. If you want to go, you better pick them up via the link in the description of this podcast, because if not, you may just miss your chance. This show is going to sell out. This is a unique metal and beer festival happening in my hometown of Montreal. I'm going to be there, and if you want to be there as well, pick up your tickets. I am beyond stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life that you know just loves listening to in-depth interviews, well, you should let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast has over 300 episodes where I do exactly that. If you were to encourage one of your friends to become a future Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today on the podcast, I'm very stoked to be back with Alexander Jones of Undeath. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 341.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I am back with Alexander Jones of Undeath. I am just so stoked to be back with you. Last time we had a conversation was episode 225. We are over 100 episodes since then. Very, very stoked to be back with you. Let's start with a simple question. How are you doing?
Matt, I'm doing great. I am chilling. It's been a nice, relaxing day. Didn't really get up to a whole lot today, and I'm happy to be talking to you. So could be doing a hell of a lot worse.
That makes me very happy to hear that. I was really looking forward to this. Massive shout out to Nikki for hooking us up together, breaking the law PR. I'm going to dig deeper into that topic a little bit later, but let's just reflect on the past year you've had. I did ask you last time how people have been coping with this wonderful time that we're living through, but I am interested in how you have been doing. How has this past year been for you? It's been a mammoth of a year for Undeath. How have you been throughout the past year since the last time you were on the podcast?
I've been great, man. I mean, I feel like in a really good space. Just very excited about all the stuff going on with the band and with the album. You know, pretty much like ever since our last interview, maybe like we did that last one, and then like a couple months later, we were kind of just off to the races, like getting this album ready. So, like, my entire life has pretty much been focused around making this album happen. So the fact that it's finally, you know, announced and singles are coming out and videos are coming out and people know about it and are aware of it, it feels incredible. I feel great. I feel very, very zen at the moment.
That's good. That makes me happy. Let's help you be even more zen. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, what beer are you going to be presenting on your side that we're going to be sharing virtually tonight?
All right. So as I was telling you before we started, I actually haven't been drinking a lot around the house recently. You know, I feel like once we get back on the road, all bets are kind of off. But I don't know. I feel like over the course of lockdown, I kind of developed a sizable beer paunch. So I've been trying to curb that a little bit, but it's a special occasion. So I went to a fabulous Wegmans and I went to, and I got a Rohrbach Brewing Company, vanilla porter. Rohrbach's an awesome, very old school brewery here in Rochester. If I'm not mistaken, they are the first, like, or longest lasting, at very least, craft brewery up here. This is just like a classic Rochester beer in my eyes. It's just a solid, drinkable vanilla porter, super bready, super malty. It's a great beer.
Sounds delicious. I wish I was having that, but we are recording this during my sober February. All my content is sober, and so am I throughout the month. But I am very, very happy to be holding this. A massive shout out to Drew and the wonderful crew at Kanawaki Brewing. I actually just got my hands on this today. And last time we were together, I was actually drinking a massive stout by Kanawaki Brewing, and it's not very often I get my hands on them. So this is actually just like perfect timing, and I'm excited about that. This is their non-alcoholic. It's 0.0%. Sometimes they say it's, you know, 0.5. I don't know how we did this. I'll have to ask them. This is their Bridge Zero. It's just a non-alcoholic blonde. Cool branding as usual. It always feels great, their beers. I'm going to crack this, and I would love to hear about taking that break. Deciding to fight the hops is the expression that I'm doing myself, and I have been doing it since the new year, because myself as well, I played a show, Heavy Montreal Presents Brutal Montreal, where Cryptopsy was headlining, and I saw pictures, and I knew that I, you know, was tying my belt in a different location, and I need to work on getting myself back to where I was before the pandemic. So I've been fighting the hops. So you pour that out, I'll pour this out, and we'll taste these beers, and then we'll dig into how we're each fighting the hops.
Cheers, brother. All right. Yeah, let me crack this beer before I tell you all about how I haven't been drinking recently. Yeah, you know, it was just like COVID was happening and lockdown was happening, and I think a lot of people took that as a opportunity to better themselves in some way, whether like health-wise, and I kind of took it as an opportunity to stop bettering myself. You know, I just, not out of any sort of like depression or desperation, it was just like in the months leading up to COVID, I'd just been on this like fitness craze, like just been going to the gym like 7 days a week. Like I was really just going nonstop with it, and then, you know, lockdown happened, gyms were closed, and I didn't have weights at home, so you know, I kind of took that as an opportunity to relax a little bit, and then that opportunity to relax kind of turned into me just stopping exercising 100% of the time. And yeah, and then like that coupled with the fact that, you know, me and Kyle and the other guys on death, like we're all like pretty big partiers, like we drink all the time. And back then, I think the winds are changing a little bit, but back then, right on the time that we did our first episode, it was like New England super boozy, hazy IPAs were the soup du jour of beer. And I was just bringing those all the time, like 9, 10, 11, 12% IPAs, like just two or three, not a day, but like every other day, it seemed like. And then I was like, why am I gaining all this weight? You know, like this is, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't eat like fast food and fried chicken and stuff all the time. Like all I do is drink, you know, two beers a night. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, that'll do it.
You have to imagine how many calories they are.
Oh, well, so here's the thing. Like, I don't have any way to verify this, but Kyle works at a brewery here in Rochester. I think we mentioned last time, called Nine Maidens.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, they're just awesome. Like, great people, really good beer. And I was talking with their owner one time, and or Kyle and I were, and he told us about a brewery that I won't mention here in Rochester because I don't want to, like, put them on blast or anything. But he was talking about their IPAs and their hazies and stuff, and he was like, oh yeah, dude, like those beers regularly like hit 800-900 calories, 1,000 calories a can. Yeah. And I was like,
no wonder.
Oh fuck.
You know, yeah, two, like, of them is your daily allowance.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You're not allowed to eat food, and there's nothing good in it.
Yeah, no,
you, well, know, it's delicious.
Yeah, I mean, I love those beers, but they all kind of like locked into place for me in that moment. I was like looking down at my glass and I'm drinking this, you know, cinnamon roll pastry stout. And I'm like, oh, this is bad for you.
Oh, I understand everything now as you stroke your punch. But
yeah, so after that, I mean, that was a couple months ago, and it was just kind of like, you know, it's not like I stopped drinking, but it was just I really tried to curb my drinking habits at home a lot. Mm-hmm. That was the big thing, because I just kind of got into the space where I would get home and, you know, I would just turn on a movie or just sit in front of my computer or something. And then I'm like, well, I might as well drink a beer while I'm here. And given the taste that I have for beers, they're all beers that are terrible for you. So that was just like my big mission for the past couple of months, was just to kind of put that by the wayside. And I feel like I've been largely succeeding at that, which has been nice.
It's a habit, right? So that association of I'm finished work, I'm finished doing the thing that I had to do today, let's have a little reward. And then you get into that like dopamine feeling of rewarding yourself and feeling good and proud that you accomplished something. Why not have a little beer? And then here you are pounding an extra 2,000 calories in a sitting.
Right. Yeah. And also, like, the thing that's been, I mean, this seems like the most obvious thing in the world when you say it out loud, but like the thing that's been kind of exciting for me is kind of by not drinking nearly as much at home, on the opportunities that I do allow myself to drink at home, it feels more like a reward. It feels more like a celebration. And I feel like I enjoy the beer more, because it's not like, you know, I'm just getting home on a Tuesday and I'm like, yeah, I'll crack this 12.5% barrel aged stout. Like, who gives a shit? Like, I, you know, it's Friday and I'm like, I'm going to allow myself 2 beers tonight. Like, ooh, what am I going to get?
And then it becomes special. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, and like touring now, when you get to do it. You guys have been lucky. You've done a few really amazing ones, which I want to talk about later, but I haven't gone on tour in a long time. So I'm looking forward to touring the way that I'm looking forward to drinking finally a beer when March hits. But I am enjoying a lot of these non-alcoholic ones. This Bridge Zero is actually really good. It's bready. A lot of these non-alcoholic beers feel like nothing, and they just sort of taste like sweet malty nothingness, or over like all the IPA ones I find just taste like hot piss. I'm not into it. This is cool. So cheers to Drew and the crew for pulling this off. Bridge Zero. Very excited. We got to fight the hops though. It's important to find balance, fun. We can have a lot of fun. And honestly, non-alcoholic beer is a way that I've been feeling great, and a lot of them are typically like 30 calories. So you can have a few and feel still okay. But then by the time you have like a second one, you're like, I don't want this anymore. Let's just make a tea. Let's make a satanic tea and call it a night.
Also, like, just really quick, I was just gonna say too, like, it sounds so sad, but also like a thing I've been doing very recently is I've been going to the grocery store and just getting like huge 24-pack cases of just regular seltzer, like not hard seltzer, just fruit flavored seltzer.
It works because
the bubble kind of scratches. Yeah, it scratches the same like textural itch sometimes of drinking a beer, and but that's just been like a very old man aspect of my life recently.
I love it. No, I completely agree, and a lot of sober people have told me that's a way that they got through going out to a bar for the first time. If they don't like non-alcoholic beer option, a lot of people get deep into seltzers, such as Michael Alvarez of Flub. He loves that shit. Let's dig into your craft beer evolution. You were saying that at the time you were really into just the haze, heavy haze. Have you evolved since our last conversation? Are you just like a lager guy now?
That would be the trendy thing to like now, right?
No. The trendy thing is doing the transition from being a hophead to only liking lager or appreciating lagers more.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I evolved. I would say I just kind of pivoted because, I think when we first talked, I was pretty exclusively in the hazy realm. And ever since then, like, I've just been enjoying darker beers a lot more. I've been really into porters, really into stouts, but not like super boozy, you know, adjunct rich stouts, nothing. And that's like, you know, 13-14% or something like that. Like, I do enjoy those from time to time, but just like a solid middle of the road porter, like a good stout, something that's like 6-7%. Like, you know, it's enough to get you a little buzz, but it's also not, you're not consuming 1,000 calories in a glass, like,
and a hangover, instant hangover juice.
Yeah, right. Like, I've really been enjoying that, especially like up here. It gets cold pretty early in the year, so having porters and stouts around is a big. It makes the cold months much more tolerable.
It's always stout season. It's a new Vox and Hops slogan that's coming. There is no such thing as stout season. I love stouts in the summer. I love them all the time, but it's all about balance and moderation and having just the right amount so that you can wake up the next day and still conquer the world and fight the hops. I have to talk about the explosion that's happened with Undeath. When we last spoke, Jerry Monk, the Vox and Hops middle architect, and other people from the Thirsty Thursday gang had mentioned you guys a lot. They really have their fingers on the pulse of what's going on in extreme metal. They knew that you guys were a band to watch. I'm happy that we had the conversation. I was a fan as well. And then it was like, boom. And I don't really know what the moment was. The album came out and I saw that it was doing well and I was stoked for you guys. But then I think like a pivotal moment, you can correct me if I was wrong, was when, Black Dahlia took you out on the tour in the fall. Shout out to Trevor, of course. He's always knows exactly what's going on in the extreme metal scene. Would you agree that that's one of the key moments of when Undeath exploded?
Oh, absolutely. I would 100% agree with that. The album came out and we had expectations for it. Like we hoped it did well, or rather like, we hoped our friends liked it. You know, we hoped that our girlfriends and our family members liked it. But we weren't anticipating anything close to the response that it got. So, the record came out and we were just blown away by how well it was doing and how many people seemed to enjoy it. We were just super grateful and honored by that response. And then, like maybe 5-6 months before the Black Dahlia tour, we just got a text from EJ from Prosthetic, and he was like, clear your schedule for September and October. Like, you're going on tour with Black Dahlia.
Shit, so it was that early. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was pretty early. It was at least like 4 or 5 months before the tour. But, I knew I wanted to do some touring around the album, but, I didn't expect it to be anything as big as a tour like that, especially a band like Black Dahlia Murder. I think it was the perfect band to go out with because we look up to those guys. Like, they're, Trevor especially, I mean, they're all fucking super nice dudes. We had the opportunity to chill with them all the time on tour, but Trevor is just like the man. He's can't even begin to say enough nice things about that dude.
Super
and
cool.
I'm sure he would love for me to show up right now. He's probably mortified, but he's awesome. Like, he's been a day one supporter of us. So yeah, that tour was a huge opportunity for us. And to this day, granted, the tour only ended a couple months ago when you think about it, but this in the months afterwards, people hit us up, pretty frequently saying, I had never heard of you guys before, but then I saw you open for the Black Dahlia Murder and now I fucking love you guys. And it's just comments like that really warm my heart. I love that.
But it's the perfect tour. It was the perfect tour for you guys. And I was so excited. You were supposed to come through Montreal. Of course, COVID made that a not thing. Did not happen. I was actually going to plan an after party for you guys. I was so excited about that and I was holding on to hope, but I saw it all coming. And but it's for the, I knew that the circumstances around a band, a bunch of bands coming through, crossing the border, coming back out, it was very complicated at the time, and I don't want to get into the logistics of what all that entails, but there will be a time when you come to Montreal and we will have a party and we will have fun.
Oh, hell yeah. I think we're coming in May, right?
Yes, with Dying Fetus, I believe.
Dying Fetus, yeah.
It's a massive tour, another massive tour, but I want to build up to that. a lot of other cool things happen. You got like this massive manager. You got picked up by one of the biggest fucking metal managers in existence, Like, it's Slipknot's management team. Tell me that story.
It's funny hearing Colin referred to as like the biggest metal manager, because like I talk to that dude on a day-to-day basis and he's just like a goofball. But
well, he's a part of a team.
100%. Yeah. The record was out and we just kept getting fielded with these questions about doing like shows and just different opportunities and stuff that I didn't really know how to handle myself anymore.
It was you all before.
It was pretty much 100%. Well, I don't want to discredit anybody else in the band. Like, everybody put in their work. Everybody was really, grinding to make the band happen. But as far as a lot of, like, the more logistical aspects of things, just, like, organizing and stuff like that, I feel like I did take on a brunt of the work. And I just felt like after the record came out, so many things were happening so fast that I just didn't really know, like, the language anymore. I didn't know what was right, what was wrong, how to approach things. And I just reached out to Steve Joe over at Prosthetic.
Oh, yes.
The man. Like, yep. Steve is just the best.
Yep. I met him a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, when we played in Milwaukee on the Black Dahlia tour, he bought me like $110 of Bud Lights.
He's like, thank you. It was a good decision to sign you.
which in venue terms is like 5 Bud Lights.
Yeah, yeah.
but I reached out to him via email and I was just like, look, dude, like, I don't know if you can be of any assistance with this, but you know, what do you know about managers? Like, what do you know about management? Like, can you just point me in the right direction? He got back to me and he was like, you know, it's funny. I actually do know this guy, Colin, who manages a band on Prosthetic called Wrist Meat Razor. And I feel like you guys should get in touch. So he organized like a call with us and I talked to him and we just hit it off. You know, I think I was trying to be like very business minded on the call. And I think Colin was just trying to like hang out. So it was like there were some wires getting crossed. But, you know, we clicked really, really fast. And at the end of the call, he was basically like, look, man, like, I really about what you guys are doing. If you are into it, like, I'd love for you to take me on as a manager. And I respected that because during the call, he wasn't just like, you know, filling our heads up with empty promises. He wasn't like, I'm going to get you on tour with this band and this band and this band. I'm going to make you guys fucking millionaires. Like, he was, which is hilarious in death metal, but he was like, he was just real. He's just level with us. He talked to us about like what, you know, asked us about our goals and our ambitions. And we just had a nice, long, healthy conversation. And, you know, afterwards we got together, we talked about it for a little bit and then we took him on like the next day. And it's been pretty fucking smooth sailing ever since.
I'm not surprised when you're a part of a massive team like that, doors tend to open. So I'm not surprised that everything's going really well. Another great decision we spoke about a little bit earlier, Nikki Breaking the Law PR. She just launched her company and every client that she has is just massive. So massive cheers to her. How easy was that decision? Because there's a lot of options out there. I get a lot of emails every day from a bunch of publicists. And how easy was that decision to jump on with Nikki?
You know, that really wasn't a decision I was involved with. That was just one of those things where, you know, one day we just got an email. I think I can't remember if it was from like Colin or somebody at Prosthetic. They were just like, hey, I want to introduce you to Nikki. She's going to be doing like publicity for your next album. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I guess we're working with this person now. And I didn't really think too much of it at the moment. I was just kind of like more focused on making the record at the time. But she's been incredible. Like, she is awesome. She's just super friendly, super great to work with. You know, really kind of has a knack for organizing and making everything streamlined in a way that I super, super appreciate. And I would love to keep her around for a long time because she does really fucking amazing and commendable work for us and a lot of other bands.
Mm-hmm. I love working with her in the short period of time that I have. And I wrote her an email about this. She is the only publicist that takes care of her artists in a certain way that I will bring up without bringing up anything, which respects her wishes. She's the only one that says, do not ask questions about these things. And nobody else does that. At least the people that I'm dealing with. So shout out to her. Thank you for setting this up and keep up the good work and keep taking care of your artists because you're doing a great, great job. I know who I want to
thank
work
you, Nikki.
With when Cryptopsy's ready.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, you absolutely fucking should. I think that would be an amazing fit.
When you were writing this record, the band had popped. It was a popping into the hype where you're at now. But was the pressure there to meet expectations from your previous record? Was there, because there was a hype for you guys, but not at where you're at now. Did you get to write without the pressure of having to upkeep that level of excitement for the fans that just adore you now?
That's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, internally, we always place a certain amount of pressure on ourselves, you know, with Lesions, I think we just, you know, put our whole fucking foot into that record and we were just trying to make like the best death metal record that we could make. And when it got the kind of attention that it got, I think our mindset pretty naturally shifted into, okay, like, let's do the best that we can all over again. You know, let's find, you know, we weren't trying to coast. We weren't trying to get cute with like, you know, sophomore album stuff, like adding synthesizers and clean vocals and stuff like that.
I just wrote down their name. I swear to God. I swear to you, I just wrote down their name.
I mean, hey, you said it, not me.
But I just wrote down their name. Keep going. Yeah, I'll cut that out.
That's fun. No, that's hilarious. But yeah, like we didn't have that mindset. Like we were just like, okay, you know, here we kind of looked at the elements that we thought worked the best on Legions. We knew the songs that we liked the most. We knew the songs that we liked playing live the most. And our mindset was just kind of like, let's just double down on all of those elements. Like, let's just put our heads down and just look at the things that work and extrapolate as much as we can out of them. And, you know, I think that was really kind of our whole mindset throughout the entire recording process, was just making the best Undeath record that we could make. And but as far as like external pressures, I mean, I feel like there was even less this time around, because with Legions, it was like we had just signed a prosthetic and we had a pretty strict, you know, due date for when turning the record. And we kind of weren't exactly prepared for it. You know, the deal and the signing, like it was very cool, but like it kind of happened really fast. So we had like half a record written and we just had to like,
where you're like, yeah, we'll be ready. We got a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, Steve, EJ, if you're watching this, just close your eyes right now. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. Too, maybe, but. Or you block your ears, yeah, too. Yeah, you know, we just, this time around, we had like 2 weeks in the studio. We, instead of whatever we had last time, which was like 3 days, we had a lot more time just to like really luxuriate in the songwriting process, really kind of like spend way more time in the studio just going over tones, going over just arrangements and stuff like that, getting everything as tight as possible. A lot more like layering this time around really stands out to me, you know, especially now that we're a five piece. You know, we had so many more opportunities for solos and guitar harmonies and like background vocals and stuff like that. So we're really like, internally we're always placing pressure on ourselves, but externally I feel like the making of this record was a way more easygoing process.
It's also, you guys must understand what Undeath is more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took a drink while you were asking a question.
No stress. I get you going. Yeah, you know, being a band for not so many years, you really have to grow into understanding what your sound is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that inspiration has been very clear to us from the beginning. You know, we like what we like, and we're vocal about what we like, and those influences are really important to us. And we're not the kind of band that it's going to go into a songwriting process with, you know, like, oh, all of a sudden, like, we don't like death metal anymore. Like, we're not going to make a death metal record. Like, we're always going to fucking like death metal. We're always going to be just 100% a death metal band. And when you have that firm of a foundation in your creative process, it makes everything happen much more naturally, because you know, not to sound too like new wave about it, but you know what your truth is, you know what you're going for, and everything else just kind of happens very easily after that.
What would be, you know, a few years ago there were bands such as Tomb Mold, Blood Incantation, that were really the kings of this new wave of extreme metal, of death metal. I feel like you guys are the new reigning kings at the time. How does that feel? Heavy is the head that wears the crown. So how do you keep it going now? Obviously, you have this new record that's going to come out, but you sort of wrote it before you were wearing the crown. So this is a bit more stress. I would be stressed, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, maybe it's not a good answer, but I just try not to think about it.
That's probably the best way to do it, because if you start overanalyzing, and then you probably wouldn't have fun anymore.
Right. And that's paramount to me, is having fun. You know, I just want to have a fucking good time being in a band. I want to go out and play shows and go on tour and meet people. Like that's my modus operandi. You know, that's what I'm trying to do. But you know, it's just the kind of thing where it's like, when I think about stuff like that, about how like much press Undeath is getting and how kind of like, you know, popular we've gotten over the past year or so, in terms of just like people who come to our shows and like recognize us and talk about us online and stuff like that. When I really start to overanalyze all those aspects, I kind of flash back to like earlier in my life when I was in other bands, and the prospect of doing anything or achieving anything close to what Undeath has achieved was just like a fantasy to me, you know?
Did it seem like really out of reach?
Yeah.
Did it ever seem possible to, like, for me, I was from Montreal, so I would go jam. There's this classic building called Cité 2000, and you'd go there, and then you would see Alex Herrien from Despised Icon. You'd see Cryptopsy walking through before I was in the band. So it seemed realistic, because we're all jamming in the same building. If they did it, we could do it. Was it ever like that for you guys?
You know, it was like, I feel like I always knew that it was a possibility to achieve like that degree of success, but I just never really thought it would happen to me. You know, it was, and I really looked up to a lot of my friends from around here who were in bands that had some degree of success. Like, I'll shout them out right now. They're not metal, but there's a pop punk band from around here called Such Gold. And they have had like a pretty extensive and varied career, like lots of ups and downs and stuff like that. But those guys are really good friends of mine. And when I first started going to shows around here, they were like sort of beginning to get a lot of hype around them. And you could feel that energy in their shows in Rochester. Like, you know, you would go and there'd be people just like, there's so much energy around them because they were kind of like happening at that moment. And I viewed that with so much admiration. I just wanted to be in that kind of position. And then when I actually met and, you know, talked to those dudes and became friends with them, I was like, oh, they're just normal guys. Like, they're just people who have found themselves in a situation where something they're doing is working and it's at the right place at the right time. And they're just making the most of it while they can. So, you know, now that I feel like Undeath is in a very similar position where, for whatever reason, something is just working with our band. We just have a ton of like really positive press and attention around us at the moment. I'm just trying to stay present. I'm not trying to overanalyze, overthink. I'm not trying to brood on anything. I'm not trying to get like precious about like what my art means to me and what it means to the people who like my band. I feel like all that shit, it's just so pointless. I'm just like, look, man, I've been trying to be in a band that has had any sort of momentum for fucking 14 years. And right now, for whatever reason, it's happening. So let's just enjoy the ride. Let's just have fun. All this shit could end tomorrow. So let's just like make the most of it, you know?
Very wise words. Bask in it, enjoy it, because you never know when it might be gone. But it's not going anywhere.
Hello out there. Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
I am interested in the Dahlia tour. Was probably the biggest tour you've ever done.
By far, yeah.
Was it the most extensive, the longest tour?
Yeah. You know, I had been out for like 2 weeks. It was probably like the longest I've ever been out. The other guys in the band, I mean, they've done like weekends and stuff like that. I think Tommy, our bass player, is probably the only other member who's done any kind of like tours longer than a week before, but none of us had ever gone out for like 6.5 weeks on the road. So that was a very unique experience for all of us, for sure.
Absolutely. And you'll never, ever forget that tour. The first tours are always the most memorable ones. You could do a bunch afterwards, and sadly, they somehow feel less important. But what would be if you had one lesson, the life lesson, tour life lesson that you learned, the harshest life lesson that you learned on tour with Dahlia that you'll remember for probably the rest of your touring life?
It's an excellent question. I think it would just be to be a decent person, because when Undeath got on that show or got on that tour, we were so green. Like, we still are, you know, we've never played shows with like actual like sound and light people before, never played any shows with like stage hands or like set times and stuff like that. Like, we're all fucking DIY like punk rockers, man. Like, we just we roll up 30 minutes before doors and throw our shit in the stage room, and then whatever happens, happens. But that Dahlia tour really introduced all of us to a degree of like professionalism and just like cohesiveness from a touring standpoint that none of us had any experience with. And the reason why all that shit works, besides obviously all the hard labor that people do to make tours like that happen, is it works when the bands on the tour are nice and are like, and are genial, and they like hanging out, and they're not just like locked in their bandwagon or the tour bus, just like not talking to anybody the entire time. Like those tours work when bands are mingling and there's small talk and there's a sense of camaraderie and togetherness there. And there absolutely was that on that Black Dahlia tour. I feel like basically all the bands were super chill. Like we all got to know each other, and it really kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, like, you know, touring on a scale like that can only work when there's no ego involved. And that's definitely a lesson that I'll take with me for the rest of my band life.
It's a wise decision, because we all talk to each other and the assholes get smelt out really quickly.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, we just, you know, we rolled into that tour and we didn't have any pretensions about ourselves. We were like, we're the fucking youngest band here. We're stupid.
Everyone had been there, though. Most of the bands on that tour are bands that did exactly what you did that time. So
absolutely, yeah. And I think a lot of them took us under their wing in that sense. You know, they weren't like scolding us or anything when we like did anything wrong. You know,
what's the biggest fuck up you guys did?
I can think of two. Yeah, it was just like all the fuck ups and just anything that we did wrong on the tour were just honest like misunderstandings. Just we didn't know how things worked. We didn't roll into that tour like acting like fucking big shots or anything. We just like found ourselves in the wrong place at the wrong time at certain moments. But
this is our merch spot. Our merch spot. We already set up here.
No, nothing like that. We rolled up, and wherever Nick, Black Dahlia's tour manager, told us to go, we would go. But I remember the first night of tour, we were in Chicago, and somebody had told me, like right after doors opened, because we played first, obviously, they were like, be at the side of the stage like 5-10 minutes before your set time, so that when it hits 7 o'clock, you're ready to just walk on stage and start your set. And I was like, that's great advice. Start our set 10 minutes early. Like, I never thought about that. So we all get up inside the stage, and I look at my phone and it's like 6:49. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, close enough. So I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So we walk on stage, play our set, everything goes great. And I get off stage, and Colin, our manager, was actually at that show. And he came up to me and he was like, dude, you fucking killed it. Great set. Why did you start like 12 minutes early? That was so weird. He's like, Nick, Black Dahlia's tour manager is like, he's kind of like pissed about that.
Now the whole show is off. He did papers. Yeah. He printed all those papers, because tour managers bring these little printers and they're constantly right, yeah. They're always broken normally. And they got to get it repaired at least once a tour.
I was so gutted when he said that. I was just like, we've been in this tour for 8 hours and I've already fucked up so bad. And then like, you know, I went up to Nick and I apologized to him. I mean, he's like the fucking nicest dude. And he was like, hey man, it's fine. Just don't do it again. I was like, all right, word. And then the other one I can think of was much smaller, but when we roll up to those shows, we were oftentimes sharing a green room with Rivers of Nile. And they had those little like laminates on the doors that had all the band's logos on them. And we thought it was so cool just to have like a laminated piece of paper with our logo on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So the first two nights we stole them and just put them in the van, and we were like, they probably have a billion of these. And on the third show, Nick came up to us and he was like, who are the little punks that keep stealing my laminates?
Because he printed them and he plastified them. tour managers are the best, but they got it the worst.
Oh, dude. The shit that... And he was wearing merch for Black Dahlia tour, so he had his playful for sure. But, I mean, those were really like the only... We got all of our major fuck-ups done in like the first 3 or 4 days. And then from there on out, we kind of knew the game, you know?
I love that. It's time to rise from the grave. It's coming out April 22nd. I'm stoked about it. We talked a lot about building it, recording it. I want to talk a little bit about probably the funnest part of this whole experience of creating an album, these gory ass videos. Talk to me about these. How much fun is it to create and record these massive videos with blood all over your face? Is it fun or is it a pain in the ass?
No, it's super fun. It's especially fun this time around because, you know, especially for the Rise video, none of us has ever really been involved in a video that had like a set or people working on it that weren't just like our friend with a camera, you know? Yeah. So that was a very uniquely cool experience for all of us. And it was awesome. You know, we did them all with Eric Easterday, who is a good friend of ours. We met him right after we finished recording the album because we needed somebody to take pictures of us, and we needed new promo pictures because we didn't have any as a five piece, I don't think. And I met Colin, linked us up with him. He was like, I know this dude who's in Philly right now, takes great pictures. And we just struck a really good friendship with him really fast. And when it came time to shoot videos, you know, we were aware that he did video work too. So it was kind of a no brainer just to hit him up. And thankfully he turned out to be really great at his job. Like he was awesome. He crushed all those videos. He kind of got exactly what we wanted, you know, vision wise. It was like horror movie and B slasher flick theme, but it also isn't, I don't think it's like too silly.
No, I don't think it's silly. No.
Yeah. Cause I feel like a lot of bands when they go for like the horror movie aspect that they're like very goofy about it.
And it seems very straight and serious. And
we wanted to play it straight, kind of winking a little bit. That was like our whole vision for the videos. And I think Eric nailed that perfectly. And yeah, he's awesome. I can't really recommend him enough.
Awesome. That's awesome. Awesome. Last time we were together, we spoke a little bit about beer collabs. Nine Maiden. Kyle works there. How is Kyle? How's he doing?
Kyle's great. He wished he could be here, but he got wrapped up in some video game related plans. There's a pretty major video game dropping tonight, and he forgot that this was tonight, so he was like, I talked to him at practice actually a couple hours ago, and he was like, "Look, man, I would love to make it, but I've already taken off like 2 days of work to do this to play this game."
I have a coworker at work that tried to take tomorrow off, yeah, which is why I know about it. I actually tried to include you guys in Brutal North America, my crazy collab project I did last year. I wrote a message to Nine Maidens, and they sadly never got back to me. And
sounds like Nine Maidens.
As I set up Brutal North America, I had like a routine ritual of how to make it work. The brewery had to agree before I got a band on, because obviously the band is going to say yes. A brewery might not say yes. And Nine Maidens sadly never got back to me, so there was no Undeath Brutal North America beer, but I would love to do one in the future. You've done a bunch of collabs with them. If you could do something new, though, something just for you, what would you do for yourself, a brand new Undeath collab?
Well, first of all, I would love to do a collab with you in the future. That has to happen, and I'm going to send Zeb from Nine Maidens a very strongly worded email once we're done here. Because it sounds like him. He never gets back to me either. But if I had to do a collab, you know, I would love to do just a super drinkable, like, just 4 or 5% Pilsner. Because I remember Gate Creeper did a beer with KCBC a couple years ago. And I don't remember, I think it was just like a lager, right? It was like a hop lager or something like that. But it was awesome. And it was the kind of beer that I could easily envision myself drinking 300 of. So I would love to do a beer that was like super crushable and that people would want to come back for more of.
That's the best type of beer, you know? And the calorie count must be less than 2,000.
Yeah, unless you're drinking 300. But then you also probably have some other problems you need to work out.
Let's talk about your parents and friends. You mentioned that you've invested your whole life into this new record. And now finally you're unveiling it. So your parents, your friends, everyone has been understanding that you're doing so much for Undeath. What is their reaction now that there's such a success? Do they understand it?
You know, I don't think that they understand like the appeal of the music, but like especially like my parents, like I think they listen to Undeath and they're like, yeah, it's just our youngest son's thing that he's involved with. But I think ever since like the press around this album and the whole cycle of releasing it has just been so intense, and there's been so much more coverage this time around, you know. I think they're kind of recognizing that it's a thing. You know, it's not just like a weird lark that I'm doing in my in my free time. I think honestly, the thing that for my parents really kind of like the singular thing that made them realize that the album was kind of happening was when we premiered the first single. We got it on the radio, and it was on a Sirius XM Liquid Metal, and it was playing like every hour on the hour for like 3 days. And
so exciting.
That was something. Yeah. And I was like, that was something that when I was talking to my dad, like he had the language for it. He was like, oh, it's on the radio. Like, I know what that is.
What about the videos? How do they comprehend the videos? What do they think about those?
Well, you know, I talked to my mom about that recently, and she said that she watched like the first 45 seconds of the first one, and then it started to get too violent. And she was like, I'm sure the rest of it was good. And then I remember when she watched that one, I knew that we had the Head Splatter video coming up next, which is like 1,000% more violent. I was like, you might just want to skip the next one.
Now, how about your friends? How do they understand? I went through a certain period when I joined Cryptopsy where it was hard to stay in touch with your friends. Obviously now I've been in the band for 15, 16 years. The friends that I am still friends with are people that will be there no matter what. And I'm sure that's what your answer is going to be. But how have your friends reacted to you not being as available to them since you're putting so much more energy and time into the band?
I feel like they're used to it by now, because I feel like as long as I've known the people that I've been friends with the longest, I've always just been like, this is how I perceive myself, but I feel like I've always just been like the guy in bands. Like I've always just been trying to make like various bands happen. So when I devote all this time and energy and, you know, just a personal willpower to like making bands happen, nobody is really put off or surprised by it anymore. Cause they're like, oh, there's Alex with his weird little project.
He's just not available.
I make time, but I mean, I feel like most people in my life who are still around kind of realize that like music comes first for me. And I think the fact that it seems like it's starting to pay off in a pretty major way. I think most people who have known me for a long time are stoked about it. You know, I get texts and DMs and messages from people that I went to high school with who I haven't talked to in years. And you know, it's actually happened recently. This a good buddy of mine, Mike, who I went to high school with, he was like two grades above me, and I hadn't heard from him since he graduated. So this is, we're talking like, you know, 10 years ago. He just hit me up and he was like, dude, I saw you like on the cover of Pitchfork. Like, that's crazy. Like, what, like, what's going on? Like, what is this band that you're in? So I feel like the attention that Undeath is getting is starting to cross over a little bit into those more like not metal oriented realms a little bit more, which is awesome. I love that.
It's the flag wavers for death metal of the new generation. We needed it, so keep waving it and keep being you, because you're very, very level, not egotistical, and just seem to be having fun. So keep doing that. I love that about you.
Thank you, Matt. I will.
I always wrap up with a hangover cure. Last time you mentioned that you typically suffer in bed for 9 to 10 hours contemplating the horrible decisions you made. Has your hangover cure evolved since the last time we had a conversation?
It's evolved in a negative way. It's gotten worse.
That's like age, but
yeah, I was gonna say every year hangovers get harder and harder. I mean, and it takes less and less to get me violently hangover, which is terrifying. But you know, I was just hungover like 2 weekends ago, and I spent, you know, it's like when you get that drunk, your whole next day is just washed. And so I think, what did I say last time? It was suffering in bed for 9 or 10 hours and just being full of regret. This time around, I would say it's just suffering in bed for, let's say, 12 to 13 hours and being filled with even more substantial amounts of regret. And then when you and I talk a year from now again, it will have increased.
Basically, the week is done. I got drunk once, Matt. You know, we'll be old and gray by then.
I had two Heinekens. I'm done.
Which was your first beer. I remember that last time, too. But
yes, it was.
Alexander, thank you so much. This is amazing. So happy that we got to reconnect. So excited about everything that you guys are doing. I can't wait to see you on tour. I'm definitely coming out to that Dying Fetus tour when it comes through. This was awesome. Everyone, check out It's Time to Rise from the Grave. It's coming out April 22nd via Prosthetic Records. I know I'm stoked about it. You guys should be too. Cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, was this ever a fantastic conversation. I'm just so damn stoked and excited about all the hype and all the excitement around Undeath. The album just came out and it's a banger. If you haven't checked it out, you should definitely do that. It's time to rise from the grave. It's living up to the hype, and I'm just so excited to see what Undeath have coming up in their future, because I know it's going to be massive. Massive cheers to Alexander for sitting down with me again. I can't wait to hang out in person, which we're going to be doing soon because they're coming up here through Montreal and I'm coming to the show. This is a great chat and I can't wait to continue it then face to face. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive 2 emails a month that will contain all of the details of everything that has been happening in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see which episodes I've dropped recently. You'll get to see which episodes I got coming up. You will get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently. And you'll also get to see which albums Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing. So sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Helen Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a great rest of the week. I have one more episode coming out this Friday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.